Where warp meets weft.
Where warp meets weft.
This is Weavecast with Sine Mitchell.
Hello, and welcome to Weavecast. This is episode 55. This episode, we have two wonderful interviews for you. First up, J.C. Boggs, who is one of the leaders of the new art yarn movement, will talk about spinning her wild and crazy yarns and how she's built a career for herself in the spinning world. After that, we'll talk to John Acord of Flatwater Electronics. He is a weaver and electronics enthusiast who has come up with a interface that you can use to breathe new life into old computer-driven looms. There's a problem with the older computer-driven looms in that many of the interfaces that were used to send information to these looms have become electronically obsolete. And some weavers are having to hoard Windows 95 machines and keep them going and hope that they don't break, because if they do, they can no longer use their computer-driven loom. But John has come up with a fix for all that. So if you have a Combi or a J-Comp loom, it's like Christmas came early. Speaking of the holidays, I am recording this on December 21st, the winter solstice. This is the day of the year in which the days stop getting shorter and start getting longer again. And I don't know about you, but I am ready for more sunshine. I grew up in the South, but I'm living in Seattle these days, so it getting dark at 4:30 just seems wrong somehow. I want sunshine again. So happy solstice, and enjoy this time of staying inside and working on your projects, and look forward to the warmer weather to come. This episode, I'm trying out a bit of new gear. I recently moved into a new studio, and as part of that move, I lost all of the great soundproofing that I had in my old studio. So I bought this thing that's called a reflection filter. What's interesting about it is it's essentially a sound baffle. So instead of soundproofing the room, you just create a little baffle and put your head into it. And one of the layers that's used to create this sound baffle is a layer of wool, which I thought was kind of cool. So you're going to have to let me know what you think of the sound quality on this episode, because it's a brand new setup. Do comment and let me know what you think. In my personal weaving life right now, I am excited about e-textiles. Have you heard of these? This is the idea of combining electronics with fiber arts. And it's something that I've been intrigued with for a while. My first introduction to e-textiles was talking to Laura McCary about some of her wonderful work on a previous Weavecast episode. And then after that, Lynn Brunning published an article on Weavezine about using the clasped weft technique to weave circuits to make LEDs light up in your fabric. And since then, I have been researching and playing around with it, and it has just taken over my imagination. I cannot tell you how excited I am by this. It's really funny to me because I started out in the sciences. I was a physics grad student for many years. You know, life happened and things changed, and I ended up working in the fiber arts. And now here I am, remembering things like Ohm's law and how to use a multimeter and putting together microcontroller circuits. So it's kind of like I've come full circle now. And it's really fun to be able to take my old knowledge of electronics and put it together with textiles. And what's sneaky and interesting is that it's not hard. If you've ever been intrigued by the idea of textiles that light up, or that sense temperature, or that sense motion, it's really not hard. There are all these great new products that have come out on the market specifically for fiber artists. If you go up to SparkFun, there is a little microcontroller that is cute. It's called the LilyPad, and it looks like this little purple flower that's got a microcontroller in the center, and the petals are all pins that you can use to control and interact with sensors. And it is just adorable, and it's designed to be sewn onto garments. And one of the nice things about it is it's actually washable. The other thing I've been playing with lately is L-wire, which is kind of like a flexible neon tube that you can sew, or in my case, weave into cloth. It's very, very cool. It's like weaving with light. I guess that gets back to the whole theme for this solstice episode, is bring back the light. I've been visiting with a lot of artists. I've gone to the studio of Madeline Vanderhoot. I've been visited by Claudia Chase of Merrick's Looms and her daughter Elena. I went and learned to weave card weaving with Marilyn Ramotka. And Sayla and I got together and built some class samples for this garment class we're co-teaching at Madrona. Normally, I work isolated in my studio. But what I've discovered by interacting with other artists is you bring your set of ideas and knowledge, and they bring their set of ideas and knowledge. And when you put those two together, you get a gestalt, something more than the sum of its parts. All these sparky brain things starts happening because you'll have an idea and then they'll go, but wait, here's this other piece of information you didn't have, but I had. And then suddenly it builds on itself and builds on itself. And it's just been tremendously inspiring. I've come away with many more ideas than I can weave right away. So I'm scratching down things in notebooks, and it's really a fun and productive time. If you're lucky enough to have other artists, other weavers and spinners and dyers in your area, I'd encourage you to get together with them, either in a guild setting or just one-on-one, and talk about your art. You might be surprised what you learn and what you can teach. This episode of Weavecast is sponsored by Schacht, makers of the Matchless and Ladybug spinning wheels. Watch their website for information about the Sidekick, Schacht's new folding travel wheel coming out in the summer of 2011. Next up, we have our second in our listener question series.
Hi, Sign. This is John Sandstrom in El Paso, Texas. My question is, as a single weaver with very limited space, I'm having problems winding long warps on my looms. Do you or your readers have any suggestions on how I can do this more efficiently? Thank you very much.
Hey, John, this is Sign. Thank you for the great audio question. It's fun to hear other people's voices on the show. And could you please, please send me some of that El Paso sun? It is so dark and gloomy up here. Now, on to your question. You asked how to wind a warp in a very compact space, but you didn't give me a lot of information on what type of loom you're using and what you mean by a long warp. Because to some people, 10 yards is a long warp, and to other people, 100 yards is a long warp. But I'm going to take a guess here. I'm going to guess that you're talking about a rigid heddle loom and the peg method of warping. In that method, you have your loom clamp down over here and a peg over there, and the length of the warp is determined by how far away you can clamp your peg. So weaving in that situation would be tricky if you had a small house and you wanted a long warp. In that case, I would suggest using a warping board. This is a more traditional tool for weaving. It looks a lot like a picture frame with pegs embedded around the perimeter. Now, what you do is you pick a path on your pegs and you wind back and forth. For example, I have a Schacht warping board that I can put 14 yards on. So if 14 yards is long enough for your purposes, that would be a really good solution. If you need an even longer warp, you could go to sectional warping. That takes a bit of gear, and I'm not sure would really help you in terms of compactness. There's also a tool called a warping wheel. This is put out by AVL. It's also used for sectional warping, and I know people have been able to put 20, 30, maybe even squeak in 40 yards with this tool. It's a big honking piece of equipment, though. So I guess my first answer would be, if 14 yards is good enough in terms of length, I would go to a warping board and learn how to wind a warp with a cross, preserve the cross, put it on your loom. If you need more than 14 yards, I would investigate how to build a very compact sectional warping technique, because that's going to let you put on those 100-yard warps that production weavers do. But I'm guessing that's not what you meant. If it is, call me back, because that would be very interesting to hear about. Anyway, good luck with your weaving endeavors. Take care. You can still submit questions to Weavecast. Simply go up to weavezine.com/audio and select the Ask a Question menu option. And I will tell you, I am a bit prejudiced in favor of audio questions as opposed to emails, just because I love to hear your voices on the show. So I'm keeping a list of all the questions I've gotten thus far. And in March, I will be drawing from everyone who submitted a question, whether it got used on the show or not. And one lucky listener will receive a copy of Peggy Osterkamp's new book, Weaving for Beginners. It's an excellent reference. It's a great reference even if you're not a beginner. So send those questions in. Coming up next, we have an interview with JC Boggs about her art yarns and building a career in craft.
JC Boggs is one of the most popular spinning instructors working in the fiber world today. She took some time to talk to me about her work during a break in the action at a workshop she was conducting for my guild last fall. JC, start out by telling me about your fiber journey. Who introduced you to fiber, and how did you get to this point? Where did you start, and where are you now?
Oh, goodness. they're so vastly different. It wasn't until I was maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I was driving across country, moving from Missouri to California. And I decided that all of these cool women were starting to knit, and I should learn how to knit. So I bought Debbie Bliss's Learn to Knit book and some acrylic craft yarn and a set of big purple needles. And I tried to cast on, and within 15 minutes, I decided that I must just be too punk rock for knitting. And I gave up. And when my partner, when it was my turn to drive, and he got to sit in that seat, he promptly cast on, and by the time we got to California, had knit a tiny baby sweater for our unborn baby, which just made me less inclined to knit. So it was another maybe a year before I started knitting. It was after the baby was born. We were taking a Waldorf class, like a baby Waldorf class, and there was a woman knitting in it, and she taught me how to knit. And I didn't know anyone that knit. I didn't know anyone that spun, but I was knitting for maybe 2 weeks, and I was still buying craft yarn at like unnamed craft store. And I decided that it would be insane to spend $15 to knit a sweater. I was still very naive about fiber, and so I thought that I should just learn how to spin my own yarn. I didn't know anyone that did it, but I bought a Louette S10 on eBay for $100. And checked out a bunch of books from the Enoch Pratt Free Library. And I taught myself to spin out of books. It was probably 2 years before I met another spinner or another knitter. I started blogging about it. I was a woodworker before that. And so I promptly changed my blog from woodworking to fiber because I just fell in love with it. And I started blogging about it. And this was back before there were a lot of fiber blogs. Etsy didn't exist yet. There was not a lot of people selling hand-spun yarn online. And so in blogging about it, after about a year, people started to ask if they could buy it. And so I started selling all traditional yarns at that point. Just little, like I just set up a cart on my blog. And another year went by, and I was spending about 4 to 6 hours a day. I tell you, I fell in love with it immediately. And they say that if you spend 10,000 hours doing something, you can consider yourself an expert. So by the end of a couple of years, I was an expert in spinning and kissing. Those are the two things I can be considered an expert in, I think. I started spinning about 2 years into it. I came across Adrienne Bazilla, who does Hello Yarn. And she had a coil in one of her yarns. And I was like, how did she do that? And then I spent the next 2 years investigating kind of textural art techniques, how to spin them, how to improve on them, how to make them like stable and balanced, and how to take like these interesting things people were doing, but apply them in all of the things I had learned about spinning. Because I read these great books from like spinning masters, and I wanted to make sure I was still employing all of those ideas and all the fundamentals that I'd learned, but I was making interesting like textural yarns. So I really kind of changed the texture techniques that were going on and adapted them to make them durable and have some longevity and
You said that you went for a couple of years just spinning on your own. That's a long time to go without connecting with other people that do the same thing. What kept you going?
I have spent, I think, my life, like a lot of people, looking for that thing that you love, looking for that passion. I knew people growing up that were writers or musicians or artists, and they would say things like, I don't do it because I, like people would say, why do you write? And they'd answer, I don't write because I want to. I write because I have to. And I have never felt that about anything. And I kind of thought something was wrong with me. Maybe I didn't have that passion or that drive. But it turns out I just hadn't hit upon the thing that did that for me. And, you know, I was 26, 27 before I found it. And as soon as I started knitting and spinning, it was there. I was like, this is what I want to do. And I tell you, my house got a lot messier. Because when you don't have something that you love, that you're driven to do, or at least for me, my control issues kick in, and I spend all that extra time I have before kids cleaning and organizing. Like, I would organize my drawers once a month. But as soon as I found that thing, I was like, oh, this is why people have messy houses. Because that's what I wanted to spend my time doing, was fiber.
Well, you're lucky you found it at 26,
right?
Because most of us don't find it for a lot longer. You burst onto the national scene, really, when you produced your DVD. How did you get involved in that production, and how has it been received?
Oh, so I think I'm lucky enough to have a partner who is also a bit of a dreamer, like myself, and we tend to be kind of unrealistic people. And so we homeschool. And I think that it's because we sit around a lot saying things like, we should do this and we should do that. And when a crazy idea pops up, like, hey, you know what we should do is a spinning DVD for texture or art yarns. The other one doesn't say, nah, that sounds crazy. The other one says, yeah, let's do it. So that's really all it was. It was sitting around one night. I had just started teaching some workshops, and people in the workshop would tell me that it's so much easier to learn from an in-person, like see someone do it, than to read it off a blog or to see it in a, like Lexi Boger had her book out, to see it in a book. And so I was like, well, then I should do a DVD so people could watch me do it. And my partner was like, yeah, okay. And we had this friend who was a great guy and is a professor and lives very smally, so he had a little extra money. And he happened to be at dinner one night when I said it, and he piped up from the background and said, I'll pay for it. And so we actually just tapped into our community. This is one of my favorite stories. We tapped into our community. So a friend of ours had some money. He paid for it. I had another friend that shot footage. He was a cameraman for Animal Planet. And so he shot it. And we had another friend that did editing of videos. And he edited it, and he actually taught my partner how to edit. And then we had my partners in a band, so they did all the music for it. I knew a couple spinners just online. I hadn't really met very many in person except for the workshops. So I called them up and said, can we pay you, like, can we buy you a ticket so you can come out and spin with me in this DVD? And it just kind of went from there. There was a whole lot of drama about trying to find a space. But we built the set. We got all our friends to come over and build the set. And it's one of those things that I didn't know any of this about my friends. I knew my friends, but I didn't know any of this about my friends until the option to help out came up. And then I had this wealth of, like, skills at my disposal. And I think that everybody has that. You may not know it, but it's one of those things I like to tell people, that if you want to do something, except for a spinning DVD about art yarns, you should totally do it. Because my guess is that you talk to your friends, you have most of the skills you need. You don't need to go to some company and ask them to pay for it or pay someone to do it. That you can really go back to when we live, like, a little more simply and tap into your community. Because we did it without, like, we didn't pay, like, our friend loaned us the money. He said, if it goes well, pay me back. And the 8 or 10 friends that were involved in it get a percentage. And that's it. So it was a really cool, one of my favorite things is when it gets reviewed and people say it's so professional. Cause I'm like, that's excellent. Cause it totally, like, none of us were professional. Like, We did it because we wanted to, and all my friends thought it was like a cool and weird project. And let me tell you, it's really funny when you get a professor of English and a bunch of other people that do other weird jobs, and they spend a weekend shooting a video and then after and editing for the next 6 months, and then afterwards you have all these friends that are talking about like twist direction and grist, and people that had no idea what you did, and they're like, but what is a twist direction, and are you anchoring that? So it was really fun.
You represent an entirely new and different character to the scene of fiber arts. You're a tattooed rocker chick, and you look very different from most of the middle-aged women in the spinning and weaving guild. So would you say that you represent the face of the new fiber artist?
Oh, goodness. I think I represent a face of a new fiber artist, but not necessarily the new face. I think that one thing I really love about fiber, and I didn't get this the first 2 years, but one thing I really love about it is that people of all ilks, all professions, all looks, tattooed, not tattooed, you know, people that teach medical school, people that are farmers, all come together and we're united by this thing that we love. And I've met so many women and so many men that maybe I wouldn't have ever connected with or wouldn't think that I had something in common with. But that have become great resources and great friends to me. People that maybe if they'd seen me before would cross to the other side of the street. But now, you know, we email, we talk on the phone. So I think that I'm just happened to be different. I think that it's kind of fun for the, what did you call them, middle-aged conservative spinner? That I think it's kind of fun for them to come to a workshop with someone that looks like me and realize that I'm nice.
Let's talk about your art yarns. Your artistic profile is about crazy, interesting yarns, and they do seem to sell out quickly on your website. Where did you come up with your approach to these yarns? Besides looking great, what do you use them for?
Okay, so I'd already been spinning for a couple years and a lot of hours when I started like investigating and trying to figure out these techniques. So I really wanted them to be usable. I wanted them to have structure. I wanted them to have balance. I wanted them to be, I was a knitter. I wanted them to be knittable. I didn't want to have to set them in some special like tension set them or put weights on them. I wanted them to be good, usable yarns. So for me, that's what they are. Like, everything I spin can be used just like a regular yarn. It's going to look different because it's got texture. And generally, people rarely use them for very large pieces. They use them for small pieces or accent on larger pieces. Although I did have a woman knit a full cocktail gown out of my Vitreous Humor eyeball yarn, which is something to see. But generally, I try to apply all of the fundamentals of spinning to the techniques that I do so that you can use them. And more than that, at least for spinners. Now, they do sell out to knitters really quickly. But I think that it's a wonderful thing for spinners to learn because I say this all the time. Anything you learn about spinning is going to make you a better spinner. And these techniques, while you may not spin them all the time or you may not knit with them all the time, are going to improve your fiber and hand control. So I think that more than anything, they're great for spinners to learn because it really will teach you about what fiber can and can't do.
What do you like to teach people in workshops that they've never tried before?
I teach a workshop a month, and they generally have, I cap it at 20 people, and they, thankfully, they've been mostly selling out for the last year and a half or so. So I get a wide range of people. So I get people that have spun like crazy art yarns that don't have a lot of structure or a lot of balance. They just want something crazy. And so I'm able to teach them how to gain some control over the yarns that they're spinning. And then I teach people that have been spinning traditional yarns for 30 years and they've never done any of it. And so that's amazing. Both like ends of the spectrum are amazing, but I like to teach people everything I know. If I could teach everybody everything I know, that would be awesome because I know that the next time I see that person, if they have everything I know and then they add it to what they know, the next time I see them, they're going to be able to teach me something brand new. So I'm a big believer in teaching people what you know so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time.
You made the cover of Spinoff a few months
Woo-hoo!
Ago, yes, and now you're writing a book for Interweave Press. Tell us what that's about.
The book for Interweave Press, very exciting, is essentially, well, it's everything I knew up to about a year ago. Now I know some more stuff. But it is all of these textural techniques. It is very specific technical guides to creating them. Not only how to do them, but why they work. How to work within the confines of what fiber can do. Not trying to break the rules of fiber, but actually trying to figure out exactly what fiber can do, and then using that knowledge to make the yarn look how you want to look, how you want it to look. So the book has, I think, 33 techniques in it, and it has skeins and step-by-step instructions and swatches for each technique.
You've been to Europe and Australia to teach, and I see on your website that you're going to be going to France in 2012.
I am.
You're booking very far ahead. What does the future hold for you in terms of your career, as if you could see into a crystal ball?
You know what is exciting is that I can now actually call it a career. It's, like, so awesome. I've always kind of not had a career. Like, I couldn't find the thing I loved, and it's only about 2 weeks ago did I turn to my partner and I was like, you know, I think I can call this my career now. So I don't know, more of the same, I hope. I hope to keep teaching. Teaching is really what I love to do. So I hope to keep teaching. I teach a workshop a month, which is perfect for me. I'm home most of the time with the kids and I get to go and do these amazing workshops and meet amazing people. And so I hope to keep doing that. I have two more book ideas fleshed out. I have a couple new DVDs that we're shooting in the spring, and I am going to keep writing for Spinoff, and I'm done having babies, and I have three kids, by the way. I'm done. And I don't know. I think that it's going to all be about fiber. I don't think I'll leave fiber. I really love it. I do want to learn to weave. Someone gave me a loom, and I really am excited about learning to weave. But hopefully it'll continue on the path that it's on. I really love it. So,
well, you know that we all wish you the best of luck in your career. And I can speak for myself and say that you've been a wonderful teacher for the workshop you've been teaching for my guild. So best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. It's been great. It's been amazing. And also, for all of you people out there, if you don't belong to a guild, totally join one. There's something magical about being with people that are passionate about the same thing you are. Plus, it's, you know, an hour or two a month you get to be with people that don't think you're crazy. So, go join a guild.
If you're interested in learning more about JC, visit her website at insubordinate.com. For Weavecast, I'm Nancy Smith Kilkenny.
I'm here on beautiful Whidbey Island with John Acord, who is a weaver and electronics technologist. So first of all, could you explain a bit what an electronics technologist means?
Simply that I'm just using common, ordinary, readily available technology rather than reinventing it myself. Right now, I'm working on some older computer Dobby looms that have computer interfaces that are out of date. They were designed many years ago to work with the computers of the time, and because of the changes in computer technology, they won't work with modern computers. So I'm redesigning the computer interface for the loom to make it work with today's generation of computers.
Well, give us some examples. What are specifically some of the looms that you're developing new interfaces for?
Well, the first one was the Combi, which was a very early computer loom. It was designed to work on the printer port of the computers, and those are no longer available technologically. Today's computers don't have printer ports. They have USB ports and serial ports. So I put together an electronic changeover that would plug into the Combi loom, the place where the original parallel port plug-in was, and uses a serial port connection to the computer that all modern computers have.
Basically, you've solved the problem for the shacked Combi where you used to have to keep around a computer that could run Windows 98.
That's correct. And now it will run with any version up through the Windows 7 that is now available.
Man, I am so wishing I had not gotten rid of my Combi now.
It's a nice loom. It's a small, portable loom. There's nothing wrong with the loom. It's just that the interface was out of date, and so it seemed like a good thing to do to keep this old loom going.
For the folks who are not familiar with the Combi, this is meant to go on a shacked baby wolf and automate the process of raising the shaft. So if you had like a 8-shaft pattern, you could just press 2 treadles and the loom would automatically pick up the right shafts for the pattern you're weaving.
Yes, these are all what we call computer Dobby looms. Using a Dobby mechanism, it allows the computer to choose which shafts are lifted instead of pushing a treadle or a combination of treadles to lift shafts as you're weaving. Not only does it automatically lift the chosen shafts, but it keeps track of all that, and you don't have to remember the sequence. The computer does the sequence for you.
When you say interface, you're not talking about a software interface. You're actually talking about a physical hardware interface.
It's physical hardware. What we're dealing with is one physical interface and another that are electrically incompatible. So it's some hardware to tie these two together, and the bridge across those pieces of hardware is a little chunk of software. Nothing very big, not like a computer operating system or a Windows program, but just a little simple, short program to do a translation from one, what we call protocol, to the other. The protocol being the way that the weaving software talks to an individual type of loop.
And you, just a few minutes ago, showed me this. You lifted off the top of the black box that's on the top part of the Combi where the electronics are, and you had inserted this little, it was about 3 inches by 2 inches, piece of hardware that plugged directly into that port with some chips and some electronic components on it.
It's not very big and it's not very complicated. It doesn't take a lot of electronics to do this. It's an assembly of some very rudimentary off-the-shelf electronics components, not re-engineering or even redefining anything, but just reassembling the pieces to make it fit together. And because modern electronics pieces are small, you can get all you need on a little 2-inch square circuit board. And this is made so that it's very easy. You just unplug the old and plug the new in, and you're ready to go.
Well, I loved how it fit inside so you didn't even have to like change the box or anything. You'd never know it was there, except suddenly your computer now works with your loom.
Yeah.
What are some of the other looms that you have come up with miraculous fixes for?
I don't have a Combi myself. I actually did that one for a friend. But I have a J-Comp, which is a wonderful, robust, very nice weaving loom that was built about the same era as the Shack Combi. And it also has a parallel interface that's no longer compatible with modern computers. So I'm doing the same kind of plug-in circuit board that goes into the J-Comp loom and gives you a serial interface to modern computers.
If somebody has a Shacked Combi or a J-Comp, is this a product you're selling?
It is. I have a website where they can go look up the information. It's www.flatwaterfarm.com. There you'll find information on the looms that I'm working on.
Is it hard to install these things?
No, you generally need to be able to have a screwdriver to take the cover off, and they are all plug-in devices that you unplug the old piece or the cable that was originally plugged into the loom, plug in the interface in its place, and plug the cable back in, and put the cover back on with a screwdriver. A screwdriver is about all you need to do this.
Do you need any specialized software, or is that all encoded in the hardware?
It's all built into the hardware. The thing you need to do is that if you've used to run this loom with a weaving software that called, for instance, for J-Comp, now the piece of hardware and the software addition runs with the Macomber protocol. So you just tell your weaving software this is a Macomber loom, and it will run just like you've always done it.
That is so simple and elegant. I'm so delighted that somebody has come up with a solution for these great older looms that had just kind of fallen by the wayside electronically.
It's very satisfying because they're really nice looms. All of them, Combi, the J-Comp, and I'm also working on an older Macomber loom that has an archaic interface. they're all good looms that weave nicely, and the J-Comp is a nice large-sized loom with made out of beautiful furniture-grade cherry wood, and it's a shame to not use it just because the interface is old.
Well, I want to talk about next is a little bit of your electronics and your weaving background, because that's such an unusual thing. I mean, there aren't many of you around. We're glad you're here with us making these cool tools. But how did you come to learn about weaving, and how did you come to learn about electronics?
Well, it goes back to when I was a young man, I learned to weave. I was living in Nevada City, California, where there was a wonderful group of artists and artisans, and was introduced to weaving and had done some weaving for several years in my 20s. And then I put it aside, and as I was earning a living and raising a family. And my career choices started out in physics. I was studying physics and putting myself through school by repairing equipment for the science department. And I ended up doing a lot of electronics, and that's where I learned my electronics, mostly, is in that environment. And then at one point, I got to where I decided that I really didn't like the theoretical aspect of it so much that I was doing in physics and wanted some more hands-on things. And I looked at a couple different avenues. One of them was electronics engineering. But a friend introduced me to the elevator trade. At that time, a lot of the things that I had been doing with scientific gear and electronics were being applied to elevator control, programming microcomputers and making the electronics work with physical devices. After I retired from the elevator business and had a little more time, I went back to weaving. I had a simple four-shaft loom that I was weaving on. I was introduced to some people in the Whidbey Weavers Guild, and I thought, well, this would be interesting, and joined the guild. The guild had a computer Dobby loom, one of the AVL workshop Dobby looms. Since I had always done very simple weaving, looking at the Dobby loom looked to be something interesting, so I checked it out and worked on it for a while. That was really my introduction to computer Dobby looms. I had an opportunity to do a little bit of adjustment and repair work on that loom, which it needed. And one thing led to another. A couple people in the guild found out that I could work on these kinds of things. And it just sort of blossomed out from there.
Now, I understand that you're not the only weaver in your household.
My wife weaves. She was kind of part of getting me back into weaving. I had been thinking about it a little bit, and she had a friend who had a loom, and she says, oh, I think that'd be interesting. I'd like to learn that. She brought the loom home and asked me to help her set it up. I did, and I remembered how much I enjoyed that, and so we both began weaving again together.
What do you like to weave?
I'm really interested in complex patterns. I probably lean that way because I've dealt all my life with computer programs and solving complex problems, so the intricacies of fine pattern work is the thing that is very interesting to me.
Are there any other looms that you're looking at creating interfaces for?
Not at this point, but anything that comes up would be certainly interesting to look at.
Ah, so if somebody has a weird old computer-driven loom, you'd be the man to get in touch with.
I'd certainly like to look at it.
Now, one of the things I saw on WeaveTech is that you actually have made a Dobby from scratch at one point.
Well, that was an interesting project. I had a weaver come to me that had a 12-shaft table loom. She wanted it converted into a floor loom. With the table loom, it had originally been operated with levers, and it was easy to get 12 levers on. But when we sat down and tried to figure out how can we get 12 or 14 treadles on a 24-inch loom, and by the time you put that many treadles in, they're just too narrow. You can't do it.
It'd be like typing with your toes.
It'd be very like typing with your toes. So I suggested that we convert it to a computer Dobby loom. Her reaction was, I'm too old to learn computers. I don't want a computer loom. Well, I had actually been giving this some thought. At one point, I stopped and read a little bit about ergonomics of looms and things. I had sort of kicking around the back of my mind a way to do this with switches and a little simple control system where you could set the program. You would have a Dobby interface, but you didn't have to have a computer. What it had was a group of switches, like a light switch on the wall, just an on and off switch. The equivalent really of treadles. Instead of tying up a string from a shaft to a treadle, you turned on a switch. Then once you had that switch setting, then you needed to have the equivalent of pushing a treadle. And the equivalent of pushing a treadle was a keypad, 1 through 14. So you could have 12 pattern selections as if you had 12 treadles, and 2 for tabby. Had a keypad, kind of like a little phone keypad, and you would press a number on that, and that was the first pattern selection. And then it had, like many computer Dobby looms, 2 treadles, 1 to lift the shafts and 1 to lower the shafts, so that the actual physical lifting and lowering of the shafts was just like any other loom.
That's such an interesting meld-up of the idea of a tie-up loom and a traditional computer Dobby, where everything is kind of like a peg plan.
It was just something that was kind of kicking around in the back of my head, and here this person comes up and says, could you do it? And so I built it. It's off now and being used to weave on and working happily. There's actually 14 rows of 12 switches. The first row of switches is treadle 1, and if you want shafts 1, 3, 7, and 9 to lift for that treadle, you turn on switch 1, 3, 7, and 9. And then for the next treadle row, you set the switches for however shafts you want to pick up for that treadle. And then the treadle selection, the equivalent of putting your foot on a treadle, is the keypad.
So basically you program the treadles ahead of time.
Just like you would tie up a loom by going underneath the loom and tying the shafts to the treadles.
Right. And then after you've got those 14 switches programmed, then you just push them to do your actual weaving.
That's right. And actually, I've posted some information for anyone who's a member of WeaveTech. I posted a description of this and some pictures on the list, so you can go find it. It's posted under the file name of a no computer Dobby loom.
And if you don't know what WeaveTech is, it is a Yahoo group.
It's for intermediate and advanced weavers and topics both technical and complex weaving.
It's a great resource if you're interested into multi-shaft weaving. So what is next for you?
A priority on my list is to finish up the JCOMP interface because I want to get weaving on my loom. And getting the information out to people that have JCOMP looms that there is a solution to keep the old loom going. Just like the Combi, that you've got a Combi and your Windows 98 computer died, or you have a JCOMP and you want to run it with your laptop instead of a desktop computer, then you can get one of these interfaces and keep using the loom that you like.
Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure.
It was fun. Thank you.
That's all for this episode. And now it's time to get warped. Because everyone knows you have to be warped to weave.